Hello, I'm Rachel Schofield. Welcome to the Bokomi podcast, introducing you to books full of original, memorable insights, or OMI, from the most wanted minds in business, science, technology, and culture. In this episode...
My name's Amanda Brown, author of The Prison Doctor, Women Inside. This is my OMI for Bokomi.
The GP looking after inmates at the largest women-only prison in Europe.
She's been in prison for over 10 years now and had a horrible, horrible life. And we've become good friends, if that's possible. And I know I'm not meant to get close, too close to people, but she's moved on to open conditions now and writes me the most lovely, lovely letters. And I write back to her. And I genuinely, genuinely hope she one day will get out and have a decent life and that we will stay in touch.
Dr. Amanda Brown's 15-year prison career spans young offenders institutions, the notorious Wormwood Scrubs, and now Her Majesty's Prison, Bronzefield. It's 50 miles west of London and describes itself as a dynamic and forward-thinking prison, accommodating a diverse and complex population of 572 women. And doesn't Dr. Brown know it? She's seen and heard it all, including violence, drugs, abuse, and self-harm. And now she's sharing her insights in a memoir, The Prison Doctor, Women Inside. Amanda, welcome to Bokomi.
Thank you, Rachel.
Now, having read the book, I'm beginning to think you must be a woman who really likes a challenge, because you took a massive step, essentially out of your comfort zone back in, 2004, after 20 years as a fairly rural GP. You moved into the prison system, and I wonder what it was that drew you to prison work.
Absolute coincidence, Rachel, because having loved my work as a GP for over 20 years, the GP contract changed, didn't fancy working to the new rules that we were going to have to work to. So I resigned from my practice, and fortunately, I was recruited by a doctor that was trying to get doctors to work in prison. So I got the most wonderful phone call at a very dark time in my life. And asked if I'd like to try working in a prison, which I literally at that stage didn't even think that doctors worked in prisons. So it wasn't something I set out to do, but it was the best thing that ever happened when the phone call came. And that was the beginning of a very exciting, actually it's 16 years now, because yeah, just nearly 16 years in prisons. So I didn't plan it, but it's funny how life leads you around little corners and opens up a whole new world.
But it sounds there like you almost didn't miss a beat in saying, yep, great, I'll do that. But it was a whole unknown world to you.
Yeah, I didn't miss a beat, because I think deep down, although I suppose it was exciting, it was different. And I definitely needed to still have a job. And my at the time of 15 to 18 year old boys that I was asked to go and work with, my sons were the same age at that stage. And I thought, well, hopefully I can relate to boys of that age, if possible. And no, I found it incredibly exciting, and I felt very lucky to be offered an opportunity.
You refer there to your work in young offenders institutions, and obviously you then went to Wormwood Scrubs. During that period, before you moved to Bronzefield, the women's prison, you say in the book you were repeatedly advised to avoid working in women's prisons, and I think you even say it was your final demon. What did you mean by that? What were people getting at?
Yes, I'd worked in prisons for, I think, 12 years by then, and 7 years in Wormwood Scrubs, which is a pretty tough place to be, but I loved it. And so many officers said to me, oh, don't ever go and work in, because I was offered shifts in Holloway, and I thought, well, maybe interesting. And so many officers said, oh, no, you'll hate working in a women's prison. They'll eat you alive. They'll manipulate you. You just won't enjoy it, so don't bother. So I didn't. And I didn't particularly want to. I suppose I've been really put off by all that. But again, I was asked if I wanted to go and try a shift or two in Bronzefield. And I don't know what it was that made me say yes. Perhaps I was just curious or something, bit of a nosy old so-and-so. But anyway, I took on the shift, thinking that I probably wouldn't last the two or three shifts I'd committed to do, thinking that the women would absolutely hate me and resent me or whatever. And of course the opposite happened. They were absolutely lovely, and I just loved it. So I've been there for 4.5 years now, and I don't work anywhere else in any other prisons now, because I've got so used to working with these women, and I've become very fond of a lot of them. That might sound strange, but it's true.
Yeah, and that comes across really powerfully in the book, the kind of relationships you build. And we'll talk about that I wonder, to start with, just to give us a flavour of your kind of day-to-day work, one of the images that comes up a lot is you kind of coming into work, starting the day, booting up your fairly clunky, unreliable computer, and up pings the consulting list for the day, just a list of names, and you don't really know what's coming behind those names. And the book allows us to be the third person, really, in that consulting room, and to sit on your shoulder as you deal with everything that comes at you. And it may be very unpredictable. I guess also what's quite sad when we read the book is there's a depressing familiarity a lot of the time to what comes your way.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Yes, it's strange how after even 40 years of medicine, you bring up the work for the day and think, oh my God, what's coming in now? And will I be able to deal with it? So there's always that little bit of anxiety when the list comes up. But often I see names that are very familiar and I can almost predict what they'll be coming in with. And equally, I see an awful lot of women who come into prison time and time again, so I get to know them, and a lot of those women are sadly homeless and they're on drugs, and I almost know what they're going to need before they come in the door. But it's an exciting little job.
Little job, that's an interesting choice of word. I mean, it's from what you talk about in the book, I mean, there's some massive challenges. And some of these women have very complex problems.
They're massively complex backgrounds. So particularly when I work with the drug users, they're the ones that have had the most horrific lives. And if you dig into the background of their life and why they started using drugs, it is pretty shocking. And that's, I suppose, that really was the reason I decided to write the second book, because I was reluctant to do so to start with, because it's not my natural habitat at all, books or anything. But when I've heard the stories that I've heard, I thought it was a chance to reach a wider audience with those very often massively, awfully tragic stories that I hear. I mean, even when I was working the other day, and, you know, a woman is 41 years of age and she was abused from the age of 4 to 14. She's been homeless since she was 15. She started drugs at 11, and her abusive father was sentenced for 28 years, and the sentence keeps going up because of more crimes that, anyway, and I just hear this over and over again, and I just find it so sad. And even just for these women to know that I'm listening to them, and I care about the fact of the tragedy that led them into prison, I think is sometimes quite therapeutic for them.
Do you think that the women trust you straight away, or do you think because you're a figure of authority, sometimes there's a sense that you're not going to help them and you're not there to think the best for them?
No, I think firstly a lot of them really have got to know me now anyway, and also prisons are quite gossipy places, so if you start out being a bit of a bad'un or something, or not a very kind doctor or whatever, the word gets out. But if on the other hand they know that I'm there to help them, and if I possibly can, I am on their side, you know, and the word sort of does get around a little bit, that if somebody's there to help them, they welcome it. So no, mostly I very, very rarely, trying to think if anybody's been nasty. Not really, no, thank God.
You've worked obviously in male prisons, and we made the point about the switch. When you're thinking then about those backgrounds for a lot of these women, do you think there are different drivers that see women end up in prison to what happens to men?
Yes, I didn't really get so involved with the men in prison as to the drivers that got them there, in a way. I just took them as they were and treated them and got on with it. Whereas the women, I tend to hear the stories that got them into prison, and I think the statistic is between 60-80% of women in prison have been victims of abuse, which is pretty shocking. And the abuse very often leads them to drugs, and the drugs leads them to homelessness, and that leads them to crime. And for so many of them, they're just so relieved to get to prison. And many of them tell me that they ask the judge for a longer sentence. Some people say it's just wonderful to have a roof over their head and sleep safe at night. It's quite an eye-opener working there, and I'm glad I've had my eyes opened.
Yeah, it's you talking about the fact that some women welcome the chance to be in prison. I remember reading that in the book, and you said that people see it really as a refuge often, that it's the one safe place where they've got somewhere, a room of their own potentially, they've got food, it's going to be warm, they're not going to be feeling that they're at risk of being attacked. It's an odd tension there.
Again, I can think of so many examples, but one's just stuck in my head here that when I met this woman, she said it's the first time she felt safe in bed for 7 years. And that's, you know, and other women that are homeless say that they usually sleep in the daytime in a public lavatory or somewhere because they're frightened to sleep at night in case they get raped and beaten up, which they do get beaten up and raped and God knows what. So yeah, prison is a refuge. And it was interesting, again, one of the officers I remember saying to me that very often the cells where the homeless women, well, their cells are usually incredibly neat and tidy and clean. And it must be, you know, it's quite sweet really that the room they finally get, they really look after and keep tidy and clean.
There's a passion there, and you could hear it in your voice, and it comes across in the book, and this sort of sense of frustration as well around those issues like abuse, drug use, lack of a good education.
Oh.
And all these themes that you come across time and time again, and I can tell when I read the book that you find them frustrating. Mm. And yet, I wonder whether you would ever step into a campaigner type role. I don't sense that from you in the book. You're not banging a drum. It's very subtle, but there are themes very much that recur.
Well, that's actually really interesting because yes, I have become passionate about the homelessness and the abuse of these women. And I actually hope that possibly this book might open doors for me to meet the right people to start banging a few drums, because I'm actually quite shy. I've led a quiet little old life really. But I've reached a stage now where I'm 65 and I've been medicine for 40 odd years. If I can do some good with that now, and I have actually been invited to join a group of quite influential people to go and meet the Ministry of Justice and the Mayor, I believe. It's a group of people that are all very, sound all very scary and high powered, but I'm happy to try and go along with that now, even though I'm quite a shy person really, but I've seen it and I believe that I can speak for these poor women.
And if you had to choose one thing that would make the biggest difference to getting these women rehabilitated back on their feet, what would it be?
I guess get rid of the homelessness for one thing, because many, many women tell me that if they go out of prison and they're going to be homeless, they almost certainly will go back on their drugs because that's the only way they can cope. And that is the trigger to the crime and the prison and everything else. So at least if they have a roof over their head, and I say, I snuggle up in my old bed at night feeling so grateful now. And it never really occurred to me before I worked in that prison, but I really appreciate it now. And I can't imagine how people survive without that. So to have a roof, a safe roof over their head, and get them away from abusive partners. And sometimes the partners are female partners, you know, it doesn't have to be men, but to feel safe and have a roof and a bed.
Clearly you feel really strongly about these women, and you talked there about these poor women, and they've had some horrendous experiences in their background. And it brings us to that point that where people are torn rather between what is prison all about, because there's meant to be an element of punishment, and clearly being locked up is a horrendous thing, but you're also seeing the complexity of why these women come in. How does it sit with you, that balance between needing to punish people, or do you sometimes think, I don't even know why these women are here?
A lot of the time I don't know. Well, I know why they're there, because there's nowhere else for them. And of course, yes, it's a difficult one, because some women have committed crimes that need to be punished, but they're punished by their liberty being taken away, and they've taken away from their normal life. So the really horrible crimes that need to be punished, that's prison. But the women that have been abused and are homeless that come in time and time again as a refuge, that they're the women that they need something else. And I haven't got the answers to it, because I don't, but other than to find more rehabilitation places, more refuges, etc. But it's a tricky one, because yes, crime has to be punished, but I'm glad I'm not a politician.
It's I was looking during lockdown, obviously we've all been watching a lot of TV, and I was looking at the kind of stuff that's available on Netflix and Amazon and all these platforms, and the whole thing of true crime, this genre, is massive, isn't it? We're sort of fixated, we're mesmerized by the idea of getting into the mind of criminals. Now obviously the kind of things you see on TV are very high end, one might say, or very distressing crimes, not necessarily the kind of thing you're seeing in Bronzefield. But do you think it's helpful to us as society to be intrigued by crime, to be interested in criminals, or is it sort of voyeuristic and sensationalist?
I suppose from my point of view, it's a bit voyeuristic, really. I just think the people that I know are as individuals, and perhaps I'm more verging on the voyeuristic than documentary stuff. I mean, it has to happen, I suppose, but no, it's not, I don't need that.
But people are fascinated, aren't they? I wonder, yeah. I imagine when you go to dinner parties, there are a lot of questions that come your way.
Well, I don't go to dinner parties anymore. Well, I don't know. Yeah, yes and no, it's funny, actually. I think people almost can't understand what I do. So sometimes they're not interested, but maybe I don't allow them to be. I don't know. It's a funny one, that. But I must say, I'm not particularly sociable. I mean, so I can't remember the last time I went to a dinner party. Isn't that sad?
Well, certainly not at the moment while we're all sadly inside. But that's interesting. You say you don't allow them to be. Do you feel you protect your work, and it's actually a space that you don't always feel it's appropriate to share?
Probably, yes. That's a good comment, actually. I don't sort of sit there wanting to bang my drum and sort of tell them, oh, look what I've done. I just sort of sit there, and they half the time wouldn't have a clue, really, what my day-to-day life is like, which is fine. Why should they?
But it's an extraordinary book in terms of giving people an insight into what goes on in a prison. You do talk, though, about the fact that at times you feel what you're doing is limited. I wonder how you feel about the impact you can have, because you said, I think at one point, I feel all too often I've got too little to offer these women.
Yes, absolutely. And that little thing about you can try and save one or two, it's worth saving one or two. And that's almost my mentality now, because I can't possibly, you know, help everybody the way I'd love to, but there are a few individuals that I relate very well to that I think have appreciated me believing in them. One of them particularly is, I mentioned in the book, called Kim. She's been in prison for over 10 years now and had a horrible, horrible life, and we've become good friends, if that's possible. And I know I'm not meant to get too close to people, but she's moved on to open conditions now and writes me the most lovely, lovely letters, and I write back to her, and I genuinely, genuinely hope she one day will get out and have a decent life, and that we will stay in touch. And the letters she writes me, I sense that the fact that I believed in her and wanted her to do well is helping her try and really achieve that. Might sound a bit big-headed, me saying that, but that's a wonderful thing. And it's one or two people in all the thousand people I've worked with, but the one or two folk that you can really make a difference to makes me feel worthwhile.
You talk a lot about the sense of community in prison, and clearly you have a great relationship with prison officers and other people working in the prison. When you look at the structure of prison and the kind of opportunities that are there for women, be it in education or in trying to get off drugs and so on, are those adequate to help women rebuild their lives?
Yes, I honestly think that what Bronzefield offers is wonderful. I really do. And the officers genuinely really care about those women too. You know, you hear stories about nasty officers, but honestly, I think in a female prison, and I haven't worked in any other female prison, but I do feel the officers really, really do want to help these women have a better life. So I think they're very supportive. The biggest problem is with these stupid short sentences where they'll be in and out in, you know, sometimes 7 days. It's ridiculous. So in that 7 days, they lose their housing, they're coming off drugs, it's a nightmare. So if they're in for long enough, there is a chance for them to rehabilitate. But if they're not in for, you know, if they're in for a few weeks, it's a joke. Sorry.
No, but that's the campaigner coming out again, isn't it? And I suppose that takes us all into the whole issue of the criminal justice system and the court system. And I guess that's something that you're interested in.
Yes. Again, in the book, I mentioned that I was asked to speak at a homeless summit, which was completely terrifying for somebody like me that avoided that all my life, that sort of thing. Anyway, but as a result of that, I've been in touch with the Prison Reform Trust, and they're campaigning for a change to the domestic abuse bill, which is apparently actually going to Parliament next Thursday, I believe. So, yeah, there's a lot of people out there trying to change things. Certainly I'm just a small part of all that, but the more I realize that there's more and more people and organizations trying to change this silly system of short sentences and homelessness and stuff.
The other element of women's prisons that's so unique, and you have a whole chapter on this, is of course that many women who end up in prison are mothers, or they come in pregnant and they become mothers. And
sure,
I was quite surprised at the facilities that you spoke about that were there for them to try and help them, especially with people who have very little children, obviously, to stay
yes.
with their children. The mother and baby unit, you spoke quite a lot about that.
Yes. No, I think it's a wonderful place. I don't get that involved with the mother and baby unit, actually, because it's quite a separate unit. And they have nursery nurses, and the children are looked after by GPs outside the prison, which is a good thing as well, I think. So I don't have that much to do with the mother and baby unit, but it's a wonderful facility that is on offer for these women. And of course, many women want to be able to go into that unit, but not everybody can. They're not always suitable, but the ones that are there are very appreciative of it.
When it comes to keeping in touch with children, I guess that's one of the really tough things for women who are inside, who've got older children who are being looked after by grandma or other members of the family, and that must take a big toll.
Dreadful toll, and even worse when they find maybe that their children have been adopted without their agreement, and that can be hugely traumatic. And of course, yes, just a mother being separated from her children by being in prison. And I mean, it's thousands of children a year are separated from their mothers through prison, and that must be horrible, of course, the children as well. But yes, it's very horrible.
I was thinking about the complexity of what you do, in that obviously you're there as a GP. A lot of it is prescribing and treating people's physical illnesses. And prison, of course, has psychotherapists and people treating the mind. But there must be some crossover for you. I guess it's a much more holistic approach than it might be in general practice as a rule.
Yes. General practice is pretty holistic as well, if I can remember it all those years ago. But prison does have psychotherapists and psychiatrists, but it's very hard when I'm dealing with their physical issues to not also realise that mentally they have massive problems as well.
We find ourselves in lockdown, of course, at the moment, Amanda, with COVID-19 to varying degrees. And it may seem a clunky comparison to make, because clearly the way our liberty has been curtailed is a tiny thing in comparison to prison. But do you think it will have given people any insight into what it is to be incarcerated?
I think it must make people think a little bit about what it might be like to be in prison, because with having whatever liberty we have had taken away from us, has been hard for all of us in different ways. But it's just a tiny, tiny comparison to what it must be like to spend that time in prison. So maybe it makes people think a little bit about what it must be like to be in prison. It certainly made me think more about it.
When you're going in at the moment, which I assume you still are, presumably for people in prison at the moment, the routines and the rhythms have changed even more, have they? How has COVID affected life, daily life for prisoners?
Oh, massively, sadly. They're not allowed to have visits at the moment, which is horrible for them because they live for the visit, some of those poor women. They're only allowed out for half an hour a day exercise, which is so unlike it in Bronzeville. Normally they'd be out and about around the prison, going to the gym, going to education, going to all sorts of different areas to kill, you know, fill the time. And of course they can't do any of that now, which is very, very difficult. But I'm really impressed with how well I think the women have coped with that, because they understand that they have to do that, partly because some are scared as well, they need to be shielded. But also, which I found absolutely amazing, is that I've never seen so many thank you cards pinned on the healthcare board as there have been since COVID, from prisoners thanking the medical staff for actually coming into work and helping them, which I found really touching, actually. So I think all credit to them, that all it must be awful what having to live as they are right now through COVID, but how well they're dealing with it.
one of the things that people complain about with the lockdown is, you know, the sense of you've lost all sense of agency. You can't decide that day you're going to go to the shops and then you're going to do this. And, you know, and people talk about boredom and those kind of themes, I guess, are very resonant with prisoners.
Very much so. Yeah, absolutely. I think it is a tiny, tiny little insight into what it might be like. But at least we still have a comfortable bed at night and all the other bits and pieces, and we can eat and drink what we want. So, well, you know, it's a little insight, maybe.
There's a lovely image in the book where I think you're leaving prison. Maybe it was Christmas Eve, or you're about to go off for your kind of several day break. And as you leave the prison in the cold, all wrapped up in the dark, you talk about that overwhelming sense of, my goodness, I'm glad I'm heading out of here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think it was particularly that, you know, if life goes a bit the wrong way, anybody could end up in prison. I think that's the other thing that struck me with work in prison. It's not just evil criminals. It's somebody whose life has just gone a bit wrong and that they're in prison, you know, and it could happen to anybody. And I, you know, thank God it hasn't happened to me so far.
Just as we come to an end, we like neat endings, don't we? And what struck me as well reading the book is you said for a lot of your relationships with these women, there is no neat ending. And there's a sadness almost that a lot of them leave prison and you don't really get to find out the rest of their story. You mentioned Kim, who you've kept in touch with, and that's clearly been a very powerful relationship. But a lot of women, you do your bit, you see them regularly, and then they're gone. And you have no idea
what absolutely
in the next chapter of their life.
No, and that's hard. And it's silly, really, because I can think of a lot of women that I have become very fond of, and I see them time and time again. Then I don't see them for ages, and I think, I wonder how they are. I wonder what's happened to them. And what I don't want to do is wish them back in prison so I can find out. But, you know, I genuinely enjoy a lot of their company. So, but that is a bad bit of a difficult side to working in prison. Mm.
And as you see people go, what would be your main hope for them?
Well, for most of them, that somehow they find a better life than the one they've been living up until then. That sounds very childish, perhaps, and naive, but you couldn't help but wish that for them.
Dr. Amanda Brown, it's been great speaking to you. Thank you very much for letting us hear your OMI today.
Thank you, Rachel.
If you'd like to hear and meet the brightest minds in business, science, technology and culture, you can sign up to our monthly Most Wanted email at bokomi.com. Meanwhile, if you enjoyed this Bokomi podcast, please let us know by liking, following or subscribing on your audio platform of choice. I'm Rachel Schofield. Bye for now. I love Bokomi.